I'm Tom Adler, and I'm here at the Art Museum of Greater Lafayette with Arne Qualad, and we're talking about specifically some of his works that are in our permanent collection. But first of all, could you talk a little bit about your background, what maybe affected your decision to go into art, maybe some of the people you studied with?
Yeah, my background is Montana homestead. My father came from Norway and homesteaded out there in 1909, and I was born in 1923, so not... And he came from a family in Norway of artists and craftsmen. His cousin was one of Norway's leading authorities on Norwegian craft. He was commissioned by the government to write a two-volume book, leather-bound copies, on... a particular kind of craft. He was a good carver and painter some too. And another cousin was Tarja Vesas, who was a writer. So that was the background, but I didn't know anything about that really. But it might, my father could draw and my mother could draw, so I suppose I was in the gene somewhere. But I started, as I said before, drawing from nature. My passion was to learn the names of flowers and plants and trees and animals and birds. So when I got to college, I headed in that direction, but found out that there was an art department. I hadn't realized there was an art department in college. So I tried that, and Cy Running, with a one-man department, was so engaging that I changed and majored in art and minored in some science. Yeah.
Now, the works that we have in our permanent collection are more recent works by you. They're pastels. Yeah. We have Winter Silence, McKinley Place, and Lily Pond with Curly Dock.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the technique you use to create those?
Well, the Winter Silence, it was interesting because it happened so easily, and it happened as a result of putting in a rubbing in a gray. I think I used a powdered pigment. I don't think it was a graphite. I think it was a powdered pigment mixed with white. Yeah, white pigment, gray. So I got a certain gray for the overall background, the sky and the trees, and then darker and lighter, erasing out, and. It sort of happened quickly and easily, so that kept that mood of the white silent world. McKinley Place was engaging to me because of the road that goes back and down and lifts up in the end to it and disappears in a big grove of trees off to the left. The name on the fence post was McKinley, so I called it the McKinley Place. I don't think they knew I ever did their place. But I've done that several times too, that road, both in summer and in winter. Dale Miller has a winter one of that place. And that was, again, similar. This is a summer scene, so it wasn't to the black and white and grays, but of warm colors that were sort of rubbed into the paper, which was able to take that kind of rubbing in and then could erase things out if you want to and move things back and forth. The other one, the Lily Pond with Curly Docks, is another site-specific one, which this little lake up there with the lily pads on it and weeds in the foreground, and it was very loose on the trees in the back. Mona Berg liked it because of the sort of freewheeling way I used the chalk and pencil for the pastel. Yeah.
The color values in McKinley Place remind me more of your earlier work than the colors in the other two. It seems to the acrylics and oils I know of yours tend to be warmer, brighter colors, and are they more linked to a further western landscape? Or,
well, I was, when I did a sabbatical in 1977, in 78. My first sabbatical, and I went out west to my home in Montana and Idaho, did a lot of work in the far west. I'm from the eastern part of Montana. But that that sort of took me out of the... I had already decided I was not an abstract expressionist because I was not an existentialist. So I was doing... I wanted to do something, as I thought at the time, though, that could be understood by truck drivers and farmers and ranchers, not to mention college professors. I have a college professor friend, very close friend, who was Jack Johnson in virology, and he understood my stuff. He didn't understand any other stuff. And I think a lot of our college professors are just like the truck drivers. They're mystified by some of the stuff that they see in art, you know. And it was explained to me what's behind abstract expressionism, which is existentialism. And a philosophy professor at the University of Iowa, where I did my graduate work, he said, you know, there was a time in the 40s, maybe 30s, when existentialism was the way people thought, just like in the Middle Ages, it was with the Gothic, what was it? It was a different sort of a general way of thinking of viewing the world. Mm-hmm. Well, when I found out that I was not an existentialist, I quit trying to be and went into the round and real world as we see it.
So you think that there is a real connection then between one's ideology or thought process, philosophy, and the kind of art that one creates?
I think so. Yeah. I think that much of what sort of the kids, I say, people who are doing an abstract expressionist work since the 50s, the 40s, they were true believers there, like Walter Quirt. Mm-hmm. He really believed, and the others from New York, that they were going to change the world. And they knew what was behind it. They were existentialists, atheistic existentialists. When I decided I was not an atheist, I was not an existentialist, there's a difference. But I think that a lot of stuff that they're doing today is mannerism, much like the mannerism of the post-Renaissance. Mm-hmm. They wanted to be like Michelangelo. And they're mannerist, and when you talk to them about what's the philosophy behind, they don't know, have not a clue. They're doing it in the manner of the abstract expressionists. Mm-hmm. And there's some nice things coming out. Mm-hmm. But they're not trying to change the world. They're not true believers.
No. So they've lost the sense of the connection between the style and or the technique.
I don't think most of them ever knew it.
They didn't
know. I mean,
it.
Walter Quirt, just fresh out of New York, sat me down in his office and explained what we were doing as an abstract expressionist. And they knew what they were doing, what they were trying to do. They were true believers. Mm-hmm. But we've got a world full of mannerisms. Mm-hmm. In fact, the Department of... head of the Department of Art at the University of Iowa, just before I got there, had gone from Iowa to University of Southern California, and he'd been invited back to give a talk in Des Moines, in which he said, basically, the emperor has no clothes. Mm-hmm. Abstract expressionism, as it was being practiced manneristically in the colleges, had become academicism. Mm-hmm. He really gave it a bad time. Well, he was given such a bad time that he quit his job. He lost his job, I think, was out in the University of Southern California. It was that the whole academic world was so immersed in this manner without really knowing what they were doing, I don't think, most of the time. They were manneristic. Mm-hmm. But when I realized that, I got free from that, and I went with full conviction and faith as a realist or whatever. I want to sort of evoke the round world, the real world.
Because before that, if I remember correctly, you had actually gone to seminary, hadn't you?
I
did a divinity degree.
When I was going to the art schools after the war in Minneapolis, I was going to little Bible school. It was there that I had a real change of heart because the war out in the Pacific, the Iwo Jima, that was an existential moment. Mm. Our ship was hit and bombed and about to sink after a couple of hours, and I was dreadfully afraid of death. Mm-hmm. So when I got back after the war, I went to this little Bible school to see if they could help, and it did. I was really, I had a born again.